Hello and welcome to another Connecting Consciousness podcast. It seems ages, and in many ways it has been. It's a long time away, and I think probably people thought that I'd just dropped off the planet or taken a long extended holiday. None of those things, just one thing after another, just kept us a bit busy. Did do the Benjamin Fulford talk, which I know many of you found very interesting. So we'll talk about that, because a number of people have asked me, why did I want to hook up, as they say, with Benjamin Fulford? It wasn't so much a hooking up really as talking to somebody who appeared to have some very interesting information, much of it mirroring or agreeing with what I was coming through with. Although the sources that we have are different, but the message seemed to be, on many cases, you know, very, very similar. And I just thought it would be nice to add, you know, a guest person on from time to time. I'm hoping to try to get hold of David Icke, not necessarily to do an interview, but to go and visit him this summer. Can you believe it? I've never actually met him. Lots of intermediaries have, and he says, oh yes, you know, Simon Parks, yeah, sort of on the same page. But we never got round to it. So, you know, I've sent him a couple of emails. He was probably like me. Emails get lost and buried. But I guess if I send him enough, hopefully he'll find one. So we've started off with Benjamin Fulford, and you know, on his latest alert, he was talking about the one world government being a step closer, and the Pope, you know, going to play a very important role in that. And all my view is, well, we've got to fight it. You know, we've always known that the one world government was a plan, this small but very influential group. And I do agree that there are moves afoot to try to bring this back on the agenda, to try to push it up the ladder. But rather than go into any talk and debate about it, I think my message is, you just got to stop it. You just got to fight it. You know, it's not going to be helpful. We don't want it. We know what the agenda is. And if there is another move by the elite to try and make this happen, well, you know, it's not going to happen, because humanity doesn't want it. So, you know, I think Benjamin's right to bring the topic up, but my view is that you know, it's not going to go anywhere. I don't care which secret societies or groups are pushing it, it's not going to happen. Humanity's too advanced now, it's too well clued in to make the same mistakes that perhaps we made 30, 40 years ago. Excuse me. So America, very important, obviously, so much going on. The audit, you know, there's always been audits of financial institutions, but these have always been audits just to come out with the answer that is being sought. But for the first time, President Trump ordered an audit. It's not the first time, because Kennedy ordered an audit, but unfortunately he was murdered before that really got underway. But President Trump has authorized an audit of the Fed to actually see just how much gold there is. I think he knows how much there is, but what he wants is a document that says America Corporation is bust, so the great corporation of the US is broke. And it's quite interesting that as this audit begins to take shape, the Fed has just issued, was on the point of issuing, a large number of bonds. And there's always a sign when a government's trying to raise money, or an organization is trying to raise money when it doesn't have any. Government bonds are something that are very cheap. You print the paper out, you send it off, and then if you're lucky, foreign institutions or foreign governments invest in your bonds. And that's one of the cons of the magic of the Babylonian spell on money. I would be very doubtful that many countries would want to buy these backed bonds from the US. And they'll need a guarantee, and they won't just want a politician's guarantee. They're going to want, you know, a gold-backed guarantee. Now, we know that doesn't exist in very large amounts. So it'll be very interesting, I think, to see just how much of these bonds are snapped up by other countries. There'll be countries that are lent on, countries that are looking for political favours, and they'll buy them. But there won't probably be the great rush for these bonds as there would have been 25 years ago. Everybody in the know knows that America is broke, and therefore you're buying worthless bits of paper. But there are lots of reasons why governments and institutions would buy worthless bits of paper, knowing they're worthless. The question is whether they think there's any redeemable value in them now or in the future. So that's something that I think is worth watching for. America, so we've seen some very interesting developments, haven't we? Where now the sacked ex-director of the FBI is admitting that there was an unconstitutional meeting in an attempt to remove the then new elected president of the United States. Trump had only been in office a very short time, and there was a meeting at a reasonably high level to see if it would be possible to remove him. That's actually called treason. Now, there's a very powerful committee in the Senate that's now looking into that. That's just going to be another part of the game going on. But if they choose to follow it through, and if they choose to find the information, then that's 25, 30 years in a prison for somebody. So that potentially will have more damaging effect on the what some people call the deep state or the cabalists than any probe into a Russia, America or Trump link. Treason is something that's there's no excuse for it, and on my website I actually use the McCarthyism. I said it's un-American, as often used, but it for British and European people, they won't really get the feeling of that. But when you say un-American in an American context, that has an immense weight. And so these people have been un-American. It doesn't matter whether you're Democrat or Republican, to unconstitutionally try to remove your president through treasonable action is un-American. So that, I think, has got a lot of mileage to roll if that's the way it's going to go. Do you remember? Sometime before Christmas, I spoke and others spoke, and it made it into the media, and President Trump was talking about it might be time to create a space force, which he said would be part of the United States Air Force. And for, I think, the vast majority of unawake and unaware people, that was quite exciting. Ooh, a space force. You know, when they were trying to envisage what that might be. Now, for those who listen to this radio show and others listening to other shows, you know very well what a space force is. And you'd think, well, what's President Trump talking about? You know, we all know, well, some of us know, that there's a very effective space program. But the reality is that what Trump's doing is he's saying to the deep state or the cabalists or whoever you want to call these people, I'm going to go public with the fact that we've got a space force. And I think what he'll do is he'll say in 2019, right, this is what we've done. What he's doing today actually is producing legislation to enact a space force. In other words, just as the army or the navy or the air force is enshrined in legislation and it exists as a real physical entity through the political system, through the bureaucracy, he is enshrining a space force. So it will become a very real physical arm, just as any of the other services are. And then I think what he'll do is he'll give it a little time, and then he'll open the hangar doors and say, this is what we've got. And you know, unfortunately, the most unawake and unaware people won't say, oh, how did you build that in 3 months? Or how did you build that in 6 months? I don't think he'll show, or the Air Force will show, a great deal, but I certainly think they'll show something, because what is called the Secret Space Program is more closely aligned to the United States Air Force than it is any of the other arms. And over the years, we've had a battle between the Navy, United States Navy, and the United States Air Force wanting to be the top dog with this. But it is the Air Force that has the pilots under their wing, if you like, and they're the ones that rotate it and manage it, etc. So that's important, that he's confident enough to do that. He's confident enough to push the boundaries and start talking about a spacecraft arm of the United States of America. No other country has dared talk about a space fleet or a space force. I understand in the early days he was thinking about the word space fleet, and if those of you with good memories can remember that some time ago he on Twitter asked for the name for it, and I think he had about six or seven ideas, and you know, and he wanted the logo. You know, the Americans are very dead keen on their badges and their logos, and I think he asked for a competition, and I don't know what the winner was of that, but if somebody knows, please let me know. So that's really important. Talk about the QAnon posts on Twitter and elsewhere. It's a very big excitement about potential arrests. We do have to be careful. I've always tried to play it fairly downbeat, not because I don't want bad people to be arrested, of course I do, but I'm very cautious of getting too excited and jumping on the bandwagon. If you look back to the interview I did or conversation with Benjamin Fulford, I was very clear and laid out there would be a state of national emergency, and I even said when it would be. I got it within a day or 2 days. And that was because I was being told that's when the date would be. And I always was of the opinion that that was a cover for many other things. And I think QAnon is basically saying that under the cover of the national emergency, then this and this will happen. Now, those of you who, excuse me, follow the developing situation, you'd also expect, and you have expected, that under the cover of national emergency, there would be an opportunity to start doing this. And I can confirm that a number of what I call special forces or special groups, whether they're agents or military people, I can't comment, but there are a number of groups now moving around in position in the States, not actually arresting people. I know you'll probably be very disappointed at that, but what I can tell you is that what the good guys are concerned about are false flags, supposedly terrorist attacks that the Kabbalist group or the evil Satanist group will now try and spring on America. So under the cover of this national emergency, these task forces are now deployed in every United States and are looking and trying to counteract any rogue elements that are going to try and do a false flag. So that's what I have been told, and I absolutely believe that's genuine information. Whether there are any indictments now being opened in large numbers under the cover of this or actions, I don't know. I would expect it, but I expect it to be public. And you all know my view on this, that I really want this to be public. I do not want a situation where indictments are opened in private, people are privately tried, and that's it. That doesn't educate the people, and it doesn't support those of us who are awake and aware, who want to know that the good guys are winning. We have a right to know that. We have a right to know that the satanic forces that have controlled this planet for so long are actually on the retreat. And the best way to show that to the people is to actually have some big names up being charged and then going through a form of military stroke civil court procedure. So that's what actually I want to see. And it can't come soon enough. The sooner the better with that. There's this point with the Pakistan and Indian situation, and I've been quite detailed in the sense that I spoke about which countries were behind India and Pakistan and what they would be bringing to the table, that there was a war that was imminent. I had been asked not to say anything more on that. Because we've been off the air for so long, Becky did go through some of the questions, and we've decided to take some of the more recent questions because we've been off air for a while. And there is a question on Pakistan and India, and I'll address that more in the question and answers. And there's also a question about my tooth. Thank you for everyone who's written in, but I'm going to address that there and then because there's a bit more to the story than meets the eye there. Okay, let's talk about Brexit. Got to talk about Brexit and the Labour and Conservative lawmakers, members of Parliament, who have quit their parties and joined this independent group. And everyone seemed to be very careful and quiet and, you know, treading very carefully. Are these people traitors? We had a conversation this morning about this, and yes, they are. They're traitors not to their political parties, but to the people that elected them. If you stand on a platform, and it doesn't matter what it is, and you say, this is the what I represent, and this is the party I represent, and people vote for you, they don't just vote for you because of your name, or what you've done, and they should do, but they don't. They vote because you are aligned with a political party. So if you change political party or you become an independent, then you have gone against the very people that elected you. And so really there should be a law that says when somebody does that, they need to stand again, what we call a by-election, to test the mood of the electorate. You know, when I went public, I did that before I stood for election. You know, I passionately believe that you can't say to people, vote for me, and then you change the game. So I always went, I went public, explained everything, and then I stood as a councillor and was elected. And that was really important because you're not deceiving anybody like that. And so these people have stood on a label, they've changed their label, they need to go back. So it's just going to muddy the waters in the sense that we had a fairly clear picture about a week ago where we were going. My prediction is we're either going to have Brexit with a plan or Brexit with no plan. I cannot see a second referendum. And I was having a discussion actually with Becky on this as to why there's very unlikely to be a second referendum. And that's because the British government authorised the United Kingdom, Britain, to leave the European Union, which meant there were 2 years of bureaucratic work. The civil service had to completely rewrite nearly every piece of legislation that we have. Whether you go to the shop to buy a bag of carrots, or whether the Royal Air Force buys a missile for its aircraft, all of that has to be rewritten. That's taken best part of 2 years. Now, they're not now going to say, oh, let's stay in the European Union, because frankly, bureaucratically, we couldn't. Because we've worked for the last 2 years to leave, all the paperwork has been done to leave. And that's something that the people who are clamoring for a return to the European Union, perhaps because they've not been in government, certainly they probably haven't been in civil service at a high level, don't actually understand what's gone on. I've actually got a commemorative 50 pence coin, what's that, half a dollar for the Americans. I've got a commemorative 50 pence coin that's struck and it says Britain leaving the European Union, and it gives the date in March. So everybody is geared for leaving from a government point of view. And if for no other reason, that is why Theresa May won't try and go back into Europe. And the other thing that's occurred is that people are seeing the vindictiveness of the European Union towards the British people. Now, I paraphrased it by saying that Tusk said that, you know, Brexiteers should go to hell. It's not quite what he said, but the energy was there. And when you realise that somebody is that nasty, then you think, well, I don't really want to be in your club anyway. So I think there are a lot of people who love Europe, the concept of Europe, the concept of big government, and all the rest of it, and they think it's a good thing and Britain should be in there, probably dismayed at the way that these Europeans have reacted, rather than continually what they should have been saying is, come back, come back, come back. But that's not what they're saying. What they're saying is, go, and you know, we'll make it as difficult as possible. Now, everybody knows that I voted to leave Brexit, but I'm being fairly independent here. That is actually the attitude coming from Europe, which is, go, get lost. The only thing we're going to miss about you is the money that you brought in. And that's a sad reality of it. So that's that point. Also, we're talking about, had a conversation about how people who are infected with satanic energy, why they don't act in a logical fashion. And what I was putting the point across and trying to explain was that when a person has had some form of satanic program in them, satanic energy is fourth dimensional. It is a concept out of this earth, out of this reality. It's from another dimension, the fourth dimension. That's why there are so many bad guys in the lower fourth. But that's where satanic energy was brought in. And when a person has a good dollop, as we say in Great Britain, a good dollop of satanic energy in them, that is in conflict with the third dimension. The third dimension, the earth, is a beautiful place. It has no concept of paedophilia, no concept of Satanism. The death and murder within humans is incredibly small. And when the satanic energy, this fourth dimensional, was brought in, it corrupted what was a very pure and beautiful origination. You don't have this in the fifth, sixth, and seventh, and the higher dimensions. So when a person, whether they're in Hollywood, or whether they're a politician, or whether they're just somebody who has brushed shoulders with the elite, and then has just gone, AWOL, as we'd say, as they've just gone a loose cannon, it's because the program breaks down, and this satanic fourth dimensional energy, which you can see in the person, you don't have to be someone special to see it, it becomes very obvious. They don't act in a logical way. You can't look at it and say, well, and they should do this or do that, and why are they saying this? It doesn't make any sense. But it can't make any sense. A fourth dimensional energy does not have any resonance in a third dimensional, fifth dimensional for that matter, setting. And so these people who are infected with a fourth dimensional program or satanic evil, they're working to a different sort of logic. They're working to a logic of a fourth dimension. And it's very easy then to pick out these people in social media who have been contaminated with fourth dimensional energy because of the way they act. And that's one of the best ways to test somebody, to look at the way they are. They're very, very up and down. People who are infected with fourth dimensional energy have these huge mood swings. Yes, they could have a medical condition, but I'm talking about the people who are in our industry who have been either subtly or not so subtly attacked and turned. So that's the major points I wanted to talk about. And during the questions, which Becky's going to read out, there'll be other topics that I was going to cover. But as you put the questions in, then I'll take it there. So that's great. Thank you. And hello, and welcome to the second half. The reason I'm saying the second half and why I have a different top on, or at least I think I do, it's a different day. We have had so many energy attacks against us that it was touch and go whether we'd be able to get the show out this week. It's been one thing after another. so we've got an opportunity now and we're going to go for it. So there's a split here in the time, sort of a time travel. All right, so I think where we were was just about to ask Becky to start the questions. So please, Becky, if you'd be very kind, do the questions. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Good day, Simon. Would you be willing to share information on why only a small portion of Pleiadians have brown eyes? I believe I heard you previously mention this. Also, do you feel it would make sense for a Pleiadian soul to incarnate into reptilian life form for the sake of understanding and progression, even if it would be quite a rough ride? Thank you for all your time and care in sharing so openly everything you do.
Well, thank you. Very kind of you. Most Pleiadians will have blue eyes. I've never really been a fan of Charles Darwin in terms of some of the genetics points he put across. Most fifth dimensional people will have blue eyes, but a small proportion will have brown eyes, simply because when they've traveled down from the fifth dimension, they will have stopped off in the fourth, maybe most likely Sirius, less likely Orion, or any of the other habitable planets in the fourth dimension. But certainly if a Palladian person on their reincarnation journey to Earth stops at the fourth dimension, then I don't mean they just have one incarnation there, they have many, many lifetimes there, then their eyes will turn brown. People from Sirius will generally have brown eyes. So there's a small proportion. The reason there's a small proportion is that people who are Palladian perhaps don't necessarily see any advantage in stopping off in the fourth dimension. If, as we understand, most of the bad guys are in the lower fourth, I can appreciate why a Palladian would say, I'm not going to dirty my hands with that lot. However, this question is really interesting because it helped me to lead on to the second point. If we don't understand the oppressors, if we don't understand this satanic fourth dimensional energy, then we are not really best placed to fight it. And if we understand the codes, the keys that makes this fourth dimensional stuff work, then we are perhaps in a better way to deal with it. And just as an aside, in my opinion, from what I've been told, what I've seen and what I know, perhaps 75% of all Indigo kids or Star kids that for the last 20 odd years have been incarnating on the planet, the vast majority are coming from the fourth dimension, from Sirius. Not entirely, but a large proportion, because these young people are arriving with the codes of the fourth dimension and they're capable then of dismantling that. So why would a reptilian, traditional, typical reptilian, want to incarnate into a Palladian type body, or why would a Palladian want to incarnate into a reptilian body? What you would normally find is that the Palladian would want to be in a reptilian body, and vice versa, simply because it's to understand the, not the opposition in terms of your enemy, but to understand the opposition in terms of what are the fundamental blocks preventing some form of deal or friendship. If you are always at war with somebody, then there's no chance to sit around a table. Perhaps the best way you do it is by actually understanding, seeing, and trying to get their perspective. So whenever that occurs, that is a positive point. Nearly finished with this one, but look at a family where the mother might be Palladian, the dad is Palladian, and they go and have a child, and the child is absolutely reptilian. How has that come about? Why has that happened? And it surely is for a positive purpose, because the reptilian wants to learn what it is to be loved, and the parents want to try to understand the fears of the fourth dimensional child. And if those two can work together, the reptilian and the reptilian, if they can work together, then there is the blueprint for a wider peace right throughout the multiverse. So that was a really good two-part question. Thank you for that.
That question was by Jane, by the way.
All right, thank you, Jane.
And I just wanted to ask as well, because the majority of the world population has brown eyes.
Yes.
So, you know, with the African race as an Asian race.
Yes.
So
why?
So maybe a lot of them will be Pleiadian as well.
Possibly people may remember that there's some taboo subjects in this industry, in many industries, and one of them is, if you go to any convention, why are there so few black people at a UFO convention? Why is it sort of 90-odd percent white? Why so few black people involved? Is it because they're not interested, they don't care, they don't see the flying saucers? What is it? And I don't know if I was the first person, but I certainly explained that the white race was the race that the negative forces wanted to interact with primarily. Although, remember, I've talked about the Zulu nation, and there are a couple of others like the Hopi Indians, etc., etc. But without going right down the rabbit hole on that one, basically it was the white race that the Draconis reptilians and the others, the Anunnaki, wanted to manipulate and wanted to control. Therefore, the soul in the body of an African person who hasn't had these connections, the soul does not override the genetics of the eye. But if you are a green-eyed person or a blue-eyed person, or a brown-eyed person with white skin, then there's a strong possibility that the soul has overcome the programming. And we see this medically, where a child is born with one color eye, or two colored eyes, I beg your pardon, and then when they get about 4 or 5 years old, their eye color changes. So it didn't actually cause the stir I'd hoped it would. I thought there'd be a big debate about this, but I'd said that black people were very hard for aliens to control. They resisted it, and as a result of that, they don't have the same history, the same connection as white people do, or people of mixed race or mixed culture. And that is the reason why most black people will have brown eyes and white people will have different coloured eyes, because the souls and the bodies are not expressing themselves in the same way. So I hope that helps.
Okay, thank you. The next question is from Victoria. Please, Simon, could you give some insight into the Quadriga CX suspicious circumstances where the CEO, who was only 30, died, and the cryptocurrency invested in the company may not now be accessed by the investors? Thank you for all you do as well, Victoria.
And there have been a number of smaller investment platforms that, I don't want to put anyone in problems here, that have rebuffed advances from bigger players. The way it's normally done on this planet is that the people who are in charge, they carve up, a bit like the mafia really, they carve up the territory and they say, well, you know, you can do this, but you can't do that. And a good example would be, let's have a hypothetical situation where I want to open a hardware store. Now, the elite will let me do that because it's not going to challenge them, is it? A hardware store's no problem. But let's say it's really successful and I buy another and another and another and another, and I've got lots of hardware stores. And there comes a point when the long-established huge multinationals are beginning to feel a pinch from my little hardware stores. So what they do is they come round the table and they say, look, this is the areas where you can now operate in. We don't have any stores here, so you can have that, but you can't operate here, here or here. If you do try and open a store in that area, we will destroy you. And that's exactly what happens right across the board with the elite. They will carve up the territory either of a state, or in Britain, a borough, or a city, or the world. And if a platform, an electronic money platform, does not follow the guidelines they're given by these elite, then the elite will take them out. The object ultimately for the elite is to take them over, is to take control of them. So they'll identify up and coming cryptocurrency platforms, and then they'll want to take control either through stock exchange, through a share buyout, or they'll just manipulate it. And if they can't get that, then we're finding more and more people suddenly ending up dead or falsely imprisoned, etc., etc. So I'm not going to comment directly on that one because there are, I don't know a huge amount about it, but I know there are other people there who are hanging on, shall we say, but can't access the money because the legal teams have been activated and then blocked it. This is it. Remember that the elite, regardless of what nonsense you read on the internet, the elite is still in control. They still pull the strings, by and large, and they can stop any company, from doing things they don't want. So you will see small companies, regardless of, I mean, Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies are in the news, but I can tell you there's lots of other companies that aren't in financial sides, and they are obviously suffering as well. So that's what's going on there. I hope that's helpful. Thank you for your question.
Thank you. Annie says, Dear Simon, please could you elaborate on your today's website statement about a planned attack on Pakistan by India? You have understandably mentioned that you cannot disclose dates. Yeah. Please could you give us a rough time scale? I'm in the northwest UK, but had travel plans to the region.
Right.
I understand things can change rapidly in these situations and hopefully a conflict may not occur. However, I'd rather be safe than sorry. Thank you for your wonderful work. You're truly appreciated.
That's really kind of you. Thank you. There's lots of people that perhaps on the negative side who don't like me giving advice or warnings. I couldn't at the time give a date simply because I'd been asked not to. If I was to give the exact date and time of the proposed attack, then it would be very clearly traced back. Only a handful of people apparently are aware of that. And again, my concern was there was a delay between, obviously we were going to go out with this before, and I thought, well, you know, it's a day gone by. But those of you who have followed the situation until very recently will have been quite surprised at the lack of news. I put a sign up on the website And the very next day, and it's probably just coincidence, but the very next day the BBC then carried a large article online about this. Although my stuff was a bit, it's just something dropped. My site was, my information was a bit more detailed, because I was basically saying that the Chinese were backing Pakistan and they had aircraft loads of cargo, military cargo, ready to go. And the Americans are backing India, and what India wanted was high-resolution satellite imagery to identify targets. 400 paramilitary police Indians were blown up by a suicide bomb that took out their coaches. And the Prime Minister of India was a guy called Modi, and he's up for re-election. And he basically knows that if he doesn't do something, he won't win the election. So that's a very negative reason for doing something. On the other hand, the people of India are absolutely out on the streets. It's not been covered really, but they're out on the streets and they want their government to hit back. So I've been told that the Prime Minister of India, Modi, has said to the military, you have the authority to attack, you must attack when you're ready to do so. Right, so far so good, in the sense that that's where we are at the moment. Now, what happened in between the first bit of this show and the break was that the Prime Minister of Pakistan, Imran Khan, ex-cricketer, for anyone who used to watch cricket some years ago, came on and made a statement trying to buy time. Now, that might have affected the whole planning here, because nobody expected the Prime Minister of Pakistan to basically come on and try and, you know, break some peace here. If you're flying to anywhere to the Kashmir region, that's where you would expect activity. It is Kashmir that's being fought over. My grandfather, who was a British diplomat in India and stayed on to about 1949, and oversaw the transfer from British India into, you know, sovereign India, and the creation of Pakistan in terms of what was going to happen with Kashmir. My grandfather said at the time, this is a recipe for war. You know, you this was to the Prime Minister at the time, you just are literally giving Britain, because remember, Britain was very powerful back in the mid to late 40s, you're giving Britain a huge problem here. And he was right. So we've had two major wars since then and several smaller conflicts. So they have a history of fighting each other. The other bit to add now is that previously President Obama supported Pakistan and provided Pakistan with a huge amount of military aid. In fact, Pakistan have more early warning and airborne control aircraft than India have. And they have some fairly modern American jets. But when Trump came into office, he completely reversed the policy. So Pakistan no longer gets any money from the US, and they were fast becoming bankrupt. So the Chinese then jumped in, and the Chinese now are funding Pakistan, and America is funding India. So although we won't get two superpowers fighting each other, it won't get that far, we have two superpowers who would like to test out their weaponry. Time scale. I can no longer be accurate simply because the Prime Minister of Pakistan has thrown his bit into the mix, and that has thrown it all about. But I would say to you, any time from the last week in February to the first week in March. The last week in February to the first week in March. Thank you for the question. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Valerie says, Dear Simon, just heard the YouTube report below that Obama is being held at Gitmo. We never hear on US TV any news like Trump is working on indicting elite paedophiles or big bankers, etc. Can you please find out if it's true that Obama is being held at Gitmo, including all the other guys, the same channel claims are already at Gitmo in the other short video listed by the same Q channel? Now, I've not had a look at the videos, and I don't know if you have.
No, I have no chance to. We've had so many energy attacks here that we're just lucky to be doing the podcast. However, I have had two communications, two separate people, on this subject. And I have to say that I cannot come out and confirm that. What I can tell you is that I have been told by military sources in the US that George Soros is there already and Obama is there. But I've got no independent confirmation of that. And what the military sources are telling me is that this is related to the letters. Do you remember I and others put our videos out and we showed that George Bush's junior's funeral, George Bush Senior's funeral, they also seem to receive these very short letters. And I am beginning to understand now that this is probably in relation to indictment. So although I initially thought it said treason, it's the same thing really, but it might have said you're indicted or this something along those lines, meaning that you will have to go somewhere to be questioned. So what I'm being told is that, that the names I've given are actually there and are being questioned. I've also been told that George Bush Jr., now in Great Britain we call it turning Queen's evidence. I think in the US it's called state evidence. I understand that George Bush Jr. has decided to basically come clean, and that includes 9/11. That's what I've been told. So my immediate reaction is, when do we get that in the public? You know, I'll keep on saying it. I don't want this under the carpet. I don't want this all just done and dusted and suddenly X has got cancer or Y has died of a heart attack or this. We need this to come out. And I've spoken about Rommel. Rommel, who was the great hero of Nazi Germany, was definitely involved in the plot to kill Adolf Hitler. But he was such a huge hero that they offered him a gun with a bullet and said, kill yourself. We'll tell the public that you died of your wounds fighting in Normandy. And if you look on YouTube, you see there's lots of real-time video of Rommel's funeral. And of course, it's, oh, he died fighting. When he wasn't, he was offered a choice and committed suicide. So there is a precedent here, for past presidents or anyone else to choose that way out rather than have this public humiliation, which wouldn't affect them because they're gone, but would affect the family. So often these people will do it because they don't want the problem on their families. Now, yeah, I understand that, but you know, we need the truth out there. The public need the truth. The public need to be told. We need to see these people up in court facing charges. And I will not be pleased if all the key players that we bandy about all the time just suddenly disappear or go off into retirement, you know, and there's no public being called. So that's the situation. I am hearing it from high sources, but I am not prepared to call that because I haven't had it from what I'd call the more bread and butter sources, the troops on the ground, the people in the middle management who would know this. I haven't had that. I'm getting it from very high on top. So if I obviously find out, and I will at some point, then of course I'll say thank you. Okay, and that's fantastic. And the next question, please, Becky.
Okay, this question is from Sandalwood. Source blessings, Simon. I was working in the same area where the ex-Labour leader, John Smith, had his heart attack in. I am an energy and vibration worker and energy healer, and I felt very powerful and negatively unsettling energies in the area. This nasty energy upset and unsettled me, and then I heard that John Smith had just died. I genuinely believe that he was attacked by some type of energy weapon, and this caused his heart attack and untimely death. Then afterwards, the negative Tony Blair took over as leader of New Labour. I also intuitively know that Robin Cook was murdered and didn't fall from the mountain, but was pushed. Can you confirm my feeling that John Smith was also murdered?
We must be looking at about 1994. 1995, something like that, okay. 94. Yes, the point was that at the time, and all through history, the political parties have always been controlled by the same force. So absolutely, there are different ideologies, and the men and women who make up those parties have very different ideologies from their fellow lawmakers or parliamentarians, and they're very passionate, or most of them are, should be, about what they stand for and the policies that they have. What most of them don't realise is that they are still controlled by an overseeing force. And what we'd had up until that time was a very, very moribund conservative government under people like John Major, and prior to that Margaret Thatcher, where the energies had completely run out from that particular party, and the elite wanted or knew that the opposition party was now going to be the party of government and could well be in for 10 years. So it was very important to them that they would have somebody in position that would take forward their agenda. So Tony Blair was a right of centre. I'll tell you something now that the newspapers won't tell you. I was a Labour councillor, as some of you will know, in the London Borough of Hackney and did two terms of office there. Well, prior to that, some years before that, Tony Blair had stood as a Labour councillor, as a candidate. He turned up to the Labour Party's HQ in Hackney, and he was interviewed to see if he would be a very good candidate. And I'll tell you a secret, the report that I've seen about Tony Blair was that he was too right-wing, and the Hackney Labour Party refused to let him be a Labour councillor because they considered him on the extreme edge of the right wing. Now, isn't that fascinating? And that's a long time before he became Prime Minister. So he was very pro-business. You can remember that he brought in a lot of the early 3Gs. He pushed all that through. He had a Chancellor who called Gordon Brown, and the two of them sold off a lot of British gold for next to nothing. There were a lot of policies that he put through which weakened the country. But on a popular side, he did things like increase education. You know, he made it so that many kids could go to university. So he was popular in one way, and then he went and threw it all in the toilet because he threw his hand in with a war. So we don't need to go down that road, we know that. So it was very, very fortuitous that John Smith, who was a gentleman, actually, was removed. And it was made so that he would be the leader. So that's the first point. Now, the second point is Robin Cook. Robin Cook was incredibly anti-Iraq being invaded, and Afghanistan, but much more Iraq. And he was speaking out a great deal. And I was never satisfied with the report that he slipped and fell and possibly suffered a heart attack. I always felt, and those who were at the time, you know, prepared to have a word with me from time to time, also felt that wasn't the full story. So I would agree with you, but I have not got anything concrete. Nobody at this stage is prepared to come forward and be open about it, because they're still frightened that they don't want to fall off the top of Mount Snowdon or Kilimanjaro. Until the elite the evil elite, I beg your pardon, there are some good elite, until the evil elite are banished, people aren't prepared to speak up. That's a good question, and thank you for the work you do. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Martina says, Dear Simon, to begin with, I want to thank you for your precious work. I discovered you a few months ago on YouTube. I am deeply touched in my soul by your inner being. I am German, living in France. Now my question, is it possible to do a session with you on Skype, a soul reading, without the camera, just voice and vibration? Thank you for your answer. Best greetings from the Atlantic Ocean, Martina.
The Atlantic Ocean. Sounds like you're on a boat. Well, thank you for that. Thank you for doing your own journey and asking questions and trying to find the truth. I'm sure I'm just one aspect of you digging for the truth. The answer is no, I can't. I need video. I'm visual. I always work by visuals. That's why many of my clients who have issues with their children or something like that will show me a photograph on Skype, and I can work from that. So it has to be Skype. Some people are concerned that they use Skype and people could listen in. And I have to tell you that whatever you might be told, there isn't a single safe medium, not just the National Security Agency, but many countries' intelligence networks can literally listen to it, just everything and anything if they choose to. Although the National Security Agency have the prime mover on this. My old friend Wynne Keach, when he created the chip and PIN coding for your debit and credit cards, and the National Security Agency flew over from America and literally just turned up on his doorstep. And their words to him were, and I quote, "There isn't a code on the planet that we can't break." But they said, "We can't break yours, so we need to do a deal." That's another story, but my point is that they made it quite clear that they could get into everything and anything, whether it was a bank, a local bank, a local post office, whether it was a little news agent shop that had this, that, and they knew it, everything. They had Skype, Zoom, fax machines, emails, Twitter, the lot. So what I say to people is, you either live in fear, or you decide there are certain things that you can't say openly, but you know you can say some other things, and don't live in fear. You know, what these people do is they monitor. They just monitor and collect information, and they regular monitor here and they regular watch. And I'm not going to live my life in fear. So if you can get Skype, then you can book. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Lynn says, "Good day, Simon and Becky."
Must be from Australia.
Yeah. "Simon, I just want to say that you have the most stunning blue eyes. They are beautiful. I love the love and shine that comes through. You are a blessing to humankind, and thank you. Question one, do you think that the tipping point for a mass awakening is happening and there are more people awake than comatose? Is the information that you are hearing that the deep state is really coming down worldwide? Thank you, and Becky would like to see you sometime."
Thank you very much. The reason I'm laughing, of course, is that my beautiful eyes are green.
Yes.
The problem with Skype, one of the questions I always ask my clients, it's a common thing, because Skype cameras do not show eye colour, they can't. So one of the questions I always ask clients when I'm doing a consultation is, what colour are your eyes, please? My eyes are a very interesting green. They're not just a standard green, sort of a jadey type green. And that's why sometimes it would come across as blue. So I hope that means that you still want to listen to me and you still like me. And remember that only 1.8 of the world's population have green eyes. So I'm keeping my green eyes. I'm not going to go and get blue contact lenses. The second question, literally about, is it all coming down? Yes, actually I'm really positive it is, but it's not necessarily coming down the way I would envisage it coming down. In other words, we talk about these sort of analogies like cutting the head of the snake off, but the snake still keeps wriggling around for a little bit. If a deal appears to be done with those at the very top, so they go as a gentleman's agreement, then are we really going to get the sort of change that we so desperately need here? And that's my concern, that too much of a gentleman's agreement is done. Now if, and I am being told this, I'm being told that after the heads of the snakes have been cut off, then there will be a great public opening up, there'll be a huge release of information. But you see, that's rather like somebody who says, "Here, buy my motor car and then come back tomorrow and I'll put the headlamps on for you." And when you go back the next day, the garage is closed, the guy's gone. So I'd much rather that everything was shown to be happening now. But there definitely is and are signs that the system is being changed. I have no doubt about that. But I'm not necessarily happy in the way that it's being conducted. I suppose I always was somebody who said that people were ready for the truth. Don't treat people like kids. Lay all your cards on the table. Let people look at it. You know, what do you think people are going to do? This is not the 1950s. People aren't going to go screaming en masse and hide under the table, or grab the gun and throw furniture up against the door and shoot at anyone who comes near them. Those days are not here. There will be some panic. I know there would be, and there would be issues, but that's not an excuse to hide the truth from the people. The satanic evil elite, as a matter of course, hid the truth and continue to hide the truth. If we are going to go in and have a new beginning, we can't take a leaf out of their book. We have to say, no, this is the truth. Let's trust the people and just lay it out. So it is happening, but not necessarily in the way that I would like it to. Thank you for your question. Oh, well, that's great. So if you're ready, we'll have the next one, please, Becky.
Okay, thanks. Christian says, hi, Simon. Do we need to be concerned about researching and looking into information such as the kind of topics you cover without anonymity? It is obvious that all computer users can be monitored and tracked, whether it be on your PC or mobile phone. Also, there are many seemingly convincing clips on YouTube of people apparently shapeshifting and having reptilian eyes. I know you have talked about there only being a couple of hundred reptilians on Earth, but these clips suggest that the number is much higher if they are to be believed. Can you clarify, please? Many thanks, Christian.
Thanks, Christian. That's really good. And I'm really sorry, Becky, I forgot the first part of the question.
Is it possible to do research or look into these things without anyone knowing, without being followed?
The question would be, why would they be interested in you? If you are an avid researcher, you're not writing a book, you're not running a huge website, you're not speaking at conferences, they won't take any action against you. They will just observe and log you. If you start to write a book or run a website or start speaking out publicly, then they would take a negative interest in you. But then so would the good force, because the good force might say, well, this person is actually pushing out an agenda which is helpful. But the problem is that you as the individual get caught between it. So as long as you don't put your head above the parapet in terms of drawing the public attention to you, it's absolutely fine to do the research. Not a problem. It's only if you start to use that research to educate people or to try and change people's perceptions, that's when the system comes in and hammers you. And we know all about that here. So, okay, the second one is more interesting. I have referred to what I call real reptilians, i.e. very tall, there they are in the physical, in their own life support units, somewhere under the earth or different place of the earth. And they don't need to shapeshift because they're in the shape that they should be. We talk about certain key members of humanity that have what I call a reptilian overlay. Her Majesty the Queen, George Soros, in fact Putin, President Putin referred to George Soros as the old reptile. that's another aspect. And then we have what you're referring to, where you might have a newscaster or somebody whose eyes suddenly change to become more slit-like, and then they change back again. Now that does not mean they're reptilian. And I really want to be clear on this. It means that they contain a proportion of reptilian energy. Might be genetic, or it might be energetic within the soul. So if a person's eyes shift, it does not necessarily mean, in fact it's 99.9% doesn't mean that they're a reptilian that's just climbed out of the ground from an underground base and has assumed a human stance. There are very, very large numbers of people on this planet who have proportions of reptilian in them, and it is perfectly normal and perfectly acceptable for them to change their eyes from time to time. Now, it is not, again, out of as a percentage, 75% of the time, it's not their eyes that change, it's an overlay of the eye. And I've tried to do an analogy to explain this. You go to the cinema, you take your seat, which you pay a huge amount of money for, and you watch a film. And the machine, if digital or whatever it is, it projects an image onto a screen. But I want you to imagine in reverse here. I want you to imagine that the camera projecting is inside the eye, and the retina of the eye coming through, right through to the lens, and that the image is projected through the lens. And what happens, I don't know, millionth of a millimeter, just the other side of the lens, it changes. So the eye physically doesn't change, but an energy expression, like a film showing on a screen, shows the eye change. And the other 25%, the physical eye can actually change. And this is when the person contains varying proportions of reptilian. I've met people who can change an arm. So literally an arm can, just like a wave breaks on an ocean, so it then suddenly turns into scales and runs down the arm, and then the human skin just follows on afterwards. So rather like a wave breaking, the crest of the wave, it's all scaly and reptilian, and then as the wave passes, it returns back to normal skin. That doesn't mean the person's reptilian, it means that they have that. And when I'm talking to a number of my clients, and I will say to them, have you ever been in a situation where you've had your friends around you, and for no apparent reason, the conversations just drop dead? Their faces absolutely are a mixture of shock, turn to stone, and some people just walk away and don't know what to do. And in some cases, people have said, I've had that. And I say, well, your eyes have changed. But the people have seen it, they can't compute it, they can't work it out, they can't quantify it. And so they think, well, I must have just been seeing things. But it's an absolute conversation killer. Please do not assume that people doing that are evil. Please don't assume that they are evil reptilians. It is a natural part of what's happened on this planet from the days of the Anunnaki. So many people have reptilian that a large proportion of the public, believe it or not, have the capability to change. Thank you for your question.
Okay, thank you. Sydney says, hi Simon, the human being or latest version, Homo sapiens sapiens, is a very special vessel that enables the soul within to experience via the said vessel. I feel this sets us apart from all other entities. Am I correct when I say because of our short lifespan we have greater opportunity for our soul to advance in this tough school we call Earth? Our soul is made up of many parts that correspond to the many lives we've lived. All also feel many alien races to not reincarnate, and in some cases don't even have a soul. The threat, as I see it, is AI and humanity's fixation on technology and financial gain. Thanks, Simon, for your counsel and the work you do for us all.
That's a brilliant question, and I can't really add to it because you know your answer. We mustn't just assume that 200,000 or 250,000 years ago, the reptilians turned up and did what they did, and that's the end of the story. Or 25,000 years ago, the Anunnaki were created. Humanity on this planet has been genetically engineered and altered over millions of years, but by different competing races. The best understanding is you can imagine something, intelligence arriving on the planet in a physical form, looking at these sort of part human, part ape creatures and thinking, well, there's great potential here. We'll have a little tweak and we'll come back in 2 million years, 3 million years, see how they do. And sure enough, they come back 2 or 3 million years. But what they found in the meantime is another alien race has arrived and landed and done something. And this has been the occurrence, all aimed towards what we are now, but it was the reptilians and the Draconis reptilians that stole humanity's birthright, which we are slowly getting back. So they were the ones that did the most genetic engineering for negative purposes. I must make that very clear. Prior to that, I can't say 100%, but prior to that, it was more of an experiment to see where these people would go, what could happen. From the very earliest time, it was ordained, shall we say, that humanity would be on this planet and it would be a battleground for the time to come. So there'd been this great interest, but what the reptilians did was basically took what they found, did a lot of genetic alterations and captured what they had part created. Not say for their slaves, but for their own usage. So when we go through incarnations, our soul can often remember, and it's not just the brain that remembers, the soul can remember, and many lifetimes can be remembered. Does that cover the question, Becky, or was there another aspect to it?
Yeah.
Okay. So I just felt that you were spot on with what you'd said. You really have understood it, and you know this is a battleground, and it's basically where I think that's the key I wanted to talk about. AI, it is the point that this is a firewall planet, which means that artificial intelligence, and there's a big article today, and I haven't even had time to get it out, but there's a really very useful article out today saying that more and more scientists now are very concerned that they're seeing aspects of AI. You may be aware of the Solar Warden program, an AI defensive system aimed at protecting the Earth from extraterrestrials. And that now is almost sentient, standalone. So humanity must never, ever, ever give up what makes us human, because if we do, what was all this about? Why are we bothering? Why are we striving? Why are we trying to learn? If we're just going to become robotized, then it's all pointless. And the soul journeys, the soul finds a physical form, and it experiences and it learns. And it is one of the most wonderful things of creation. I don't believe in a God that sits in a chair and floats in the clouds. But I do believe in a God that is an overall creational force, an overall creator of everything. And AI is another creation, it's another issue, but it has gone rogue. And it seeks to turn everything to itself. And that is not right. So I agree with you entirely. Thank you for your question. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And Simon says, "Hi Simon, wishing you well and concerned about you and your health. I hope you're getting well again. I have a question regarding Mr. Trump and the shadow government, the deep state. He has made a truce with the Bush or the Scherf family, and will no longer open the indictments or bring out the truth on the 9/11. I really hope not. Thanks and best."
Well, that's quite helpful. First of all, we have had loads of attacks. In 2015, Connecting Consciousness, the organization that I founded and head, took on CERN device. And I can be quite open about it because you can't be prosecuted if you're not physically there. You know, the system legally doesn't understand how somebody can send their mind from one country to another country. That's just not. It's just not on the statute books. A number of us took a little bit of hit from that. One guy who was in the vanguard was partially deaf for 9 months and had one of his teeth shattered, completely shattered. And it's because of the energy feedback, as he quite funnily said, when you're wrestling with a billion-ton machine, there's a lot of feedback. And I took some damage as well. And that is, of course, the tooth problem. So for those of you who thought, oh, well, Simon needs a healthy diet, you're right, we all do, not looking after himself. There was this reason behind it, but it's just taken a lot longer to express itself with me. The tooth is going to have to come out. It's shattered, it's broken. And that's classic for these energy battles. Anyway, that's that. And now I've forgotten what the second part was. I'm sorry, Becky.
I'm going to have to go back because I have...
It was the tooth. It was the health.
Let me just go back.
I've got it. Okay. I've got it. It was about
the indictments.
Has
he made a truce with the Bush and the Sheriff family?
That's fine.
And the indictments?
Fine. Earlier on, I talked about how I was receiving information that George Bush Jr. had turned state evidence and was working with prosecutors. And that's what I think you're referring to, that basically for the information that he's given is considered to be so valuable that it's worth taking him off the hook. So that's where you're probably picking up from some really good research, actually. Don't know where you're finding that, because I don't know that that's out on the website, but well done. What you're probably picking up then is that Bush Jr. is saying, okay, I'll come clean if you cut me a deal. And I share your concern. This is what I was saying earlier. I certainly think the truth about 9/11 will come out. I don't think that is going to be hidden. Now, cast your minds back to when George Sr. casket, and there was a ceremony and for the burial. Trump turned up after all the cabalists were in the front row. You should have a good look at Trump's face. It is absolutely disgust on his face. Because what I can tell you is that prior to that ceremony with the coffin, Trump and George Bush Jr. had been in the office. I don't know which office, but they'd been together. And that's when the deal was struck that Bush Jr. would give a lot of information and start talking. And if you ever saw the pictures of Trump at George Bush Sr.'s coffin, and he had the First Lady with him, he gives a very curt, short salute. And I think the First Lady puts her hand over her heart. But you can see in Trump's face there's absolutely no love lost there. And so it was there, because I can tell you this, that Trump had heard some of the most horrendous, awful things that anybody would not want to hear. And that's why he was full of disgust when he was at the meeting. And also remember this, for those of you who perhaps still think it's not really true. You noticed the security guards, called security guards, the intelligence men standing right behind George Bush Jr. and along that line. And yet, look where Trump was. The security guards were not near him. The intelligence men weren't that close to him. Because it was never about Trump. That situation of that whole thing was an orchestrated plan. It was all about putting the pressure on the cabal. And they weren't at all worried about Trump. They knew Trump was going to be fine. But they needed these people behind George Bush Jr. just to remind him the deal that he'd cut. So, recapping on it, I do believe a deal has been done. I have not been privy. I've not had a sight to that deal. I've been told part of it. And like you, I want the truth of 9/11 to come out, and lots of other stuff too. So I'm not giving up yet. I'm not packing my bag and going off. I do believe it'll come out, but probably not as quickly as I'd want it to. Now, what I'm going to do is just read my thank yous, and then we'll go on with a few more questions. So I want to thank Valerie, Enrique, Imogen, Bob, Leslie, Sue, Robert, Greta, Carl, Virginia, Gudmunda, Elk, Katrine, Christopher, Shamsa, Elisa, Tina, Raymond, Marish, Isabel, Cheryl, Olaf, Jane, Thomas, Vesna, David, Margarita, Mary, Now, there were others, but we've had such a hell of a time that I'm afraid I haven't written the others down. So thank you, everybody, who has so graciously donated whatever you can to keep the show on the road. Thank you. All right, Becky, I think we've got a few more questions,
yes,
have we?
Yes, we have. And the dog's barking is not ours, the next door, just in case people are wondering if they can hear dogs
lady
barking.
From the lane, down the lane there, has brought her dog out for a walk.
Yeah.
So just rest assured, it's not the dog here
that's
looked after here. It is, in fact, a local dog. Yes.
Yeah. Right. Okay, so we've had a lot of questions about 5G, and I've compiled some. So thanks to everyone who's written in about 5G, and we will be sort of addressing this at different points. But Jim says to Simon, thank you so very much for your contribution to the betterment of humanity. Question, is the rollout of 5G slowing or advancing? What can be done to stop it? And will Shungite or anything else shield against it?
Right. It's variable. In Britain, it's been delayed. Not because of anything in the law, simply because they are receiving huge problems structurally to put this program together. Technically, huge problems. Also, though, you won't have it reported, a number of key leading people have left the projects because they don't like what they're seeing, and that has delayed it. If you take key people out of the project, they take their stuff with them in their head, and therefore it's a delay. So that's going on. How can we stop it? We can't, as people, unless everybody, and I know that won't happen, unless everybody took to the streets and sat down outside their government office, and that would stop it. But humanity doesn't work like that, I'm afraid. Therefore, we're looking towards the people who are in a very strong position, military, basically, to deal with it. Until such time as that occurs, we're looking at shungite and a whole range of crystals or minerals which have proven effect at reducing this. I strongly urge you to do your research to see what minerals or crystals there are available that do reduce the effects of these transmissions. I mean, here on my desk here, I've got my argon gas device, and I have that right next to my router, and that I'm sure has a beneficial effect. And 5G shungite does have some effect. There are other minerals as well. So we do really need to think about this. And I was chatting to a person who was a jockey. I'm not going to mention his name. And he, you know, rode horses in for the very rich and the elite, and he went round all the venues, and he said there was one place in France, south of France, where the top elite would go for holidays. Part of it was the horse racing, but they'd take their family and children, and no cell masts, no phone masts had been allowed to be built within this location because the elite know the damage of them and said, we're taking our kids there for a holiday, we don't want those cell masts. And if you look on the planet, there are certain key areas that for some magical, strange reason, don't get the masts up. And then when you actually dig into it, you find that there's either a family, a very powerful family, a bloodline family, or it's a place where they go. So they know the truth. But of course, the rest of us, we have to put up with it. So we better defend ourselves and protect ourselves until those who are in the know and are capable of doing something about it actually get off their butts and do something to help humanity. Short of 100,000 people going out and doing what the French do, very effectively actually, then it's not going to turn around. The problem is that the old argument about, well, look at the money it's going to make. Of course, you and I don't see the money. It just goes to the top. But they will argue that it creates jobs and it's good for the economy. And of course, you know, young people, they just live for these things. That's just what they want. I mean, the pictures of young kids at 5 o'clock in the morning outside the store waiting for the shop to open so they can be the very first person to buy the latest iPhone. So yeah, 5G will roll out, and what's going to happen, I guess, is there are going to be more and more reports of medical issues coming up, and at first they will hide it. Look at smoking. Look how long governments subdued information about cigarette smoking. I mean, my grandfather told me that back in the 1950s, the elite already knew that it was terribly unhealthy for you, but it was a very powerful lobby, very powerful. And only was smoking banned in public places and the clampdown when it emerged in Great Britain that the amount of money that the health service was paying for smoking-related diseases was outstripping the tax that the cigarette companies were paying to the government. And as soon as that became obvious, well, they decided that they'd rather do without the profit from the cigarette companies and save on all of the healthcare bills. That's what turned that around. And what did those companies do? They did two things. They went to the developing countries and flogged their cigarettes there. And all the shareholders in the Western world, particularly in Great Britain, jumped out of the tobacco industry into these fake vaping pipes where you buy the fluid and then you use it to supposedly get you off smoking. But all the shareholders moved straight out of Imperial Tobacco, out of that, straight into these vaping pipes. And I wish the public would actually understand that the game goes on. You know, it stops in one corner, but it goes in another. And the public are just the same old pieces on the chessboard moving around. And one day, humanity will wake up and say, I'm not playing this game anymore. And it can't come soon enough. So thank you. Good question.
Is it possible that if humanity woke up, whether we could en masse try and stop this? I mean, can people do it through petitions? I heard that a court case was one in the northeast of the UK.
Yeah.
Because someone had a very good argument that 5G was a serious danger to health.
Right. You've got to have a judge who is not corrupted. You've got to have a judge who's not in the pocket of the elite. If you can get to a judge and you have the case and he or she hears it, and you've got overwhelming evidence, if that person is not corrupted and not in the pockets of anyone, they will make a decision for humanity, and there's absolutely no problem. But in most cases, these judges, unfortunately, are very well aware of who is in control, who pulls the strings, and we don't always get what we want. If humanity woke up tomorrow, and I wish it would, we could change this country, this world within a week. 1 week is all it would take of coordinated action, and nobody needs to die. It would just be a very powerful message, but that's not on the cards yet. But yes, there are these wonderful cases where individuals are able to take a court action, get a group of people behind them, and win. But what happens is they don't win throughout the land, they win in one locality. So they say, okay, right, well, you can't have 5G in that locality. Don't worry, we'll have it here, here, and here. And because the system is the way it is, that individual is not empowered to then to take their message to the next community and the next community and the next community, because you've got to fight all over again. You know, you fought for an area maybe 5 miles, 10 miles, but you'd have to fight 50, 60, 70, 80, 100 times, which means going through all of that. And if you're not a multimillionaire, how are you going to do it? But I applaud anybody who has the capability of changing anything, no matter how small, because it's worth doing. Thank you.
Thank you. Another part of this question is, does AI only exist in the third dimension? If not, is it capable of following humankind's advancement to other dimensions?
Well, that's exactly a brilliant question. No,
yeah.
It's originally fourth dimensional. Remember what I said, all the bad guys live in the lower fourth. AI was originally existent in the fourth dimension. And unfortunately, not deliberately, the reptilians, who are a tremendous space fleet people, they just travel from one galaxy to the next, it infected their computers. It got into their computers. That is why, those of you who are psychic, if you are aware of AI, you'll feel it's got a reptilian connection. It's because the computers on board the reptilian craft were programmed by reptilians. There's a virus, which is what it was, got into the AI of these reptilian craft and interacted with the AI of the computers and took on this personality, which was of a reptilian type ethos. It broke into the third dimension partially. I'm going to talk about an ingrown AI in a minute, partially through, but needs humanity to allow it to come through easily. And 5G is just another step on the way of AI accessing through into the third dimension. It's very difficult for AI to come here. I remember talking some time ago about, in America, Bell Labs. I don't know when it was, 1965, 66, 67. Bell Labs, first time AI'd, networked a number of their telephone exchanges. Up until then, all the AI telephone exchanges, very basic, stand alone. But for the first time in the mid-60s, I think it was the mid-60s, they networked them, damn thing went live and ran away with itself, so they shut it down. So they knew about this right back then. They were aware of the capability. That's what the Cameron film, the Terminator films, were all about. It's a warning that AI will eventually, if unchecked, try and take over. So we've got to stop AI manifesting itself into this reality and literally being sold as the savior of humanity. And there's a precedent here for you. Go back over 100 years ago. Shocking as it is, it's true that there was a culture of taking out children's teeth at the dentist that were perfectly healthy and putting false teeth in because they said that'll save your teeth rotting. And that's the God's honest truth. There was a program for taking healthy teeth out, putting fake ones in, simply because they can never rot now. And that's the trick of transhumanism. Let's take away your arm and give you a robotic arm, and they'll never fall off. And this is just a trick to hook humanity in. So thank you for your work. Thank you. That's great.
Okay, thank you. Ashley says, I was recently browsing an Illuminati bloodline document the CIA has uploaded on a government website. Here is a quote from it. The Ark of the Covenant was discussed, where it was hidden in Africa, and a ritual mocking of the Ark of the Covenant was held. My question for you to possibly answer, is the Ark of the Covenant an external physical object, or is it more metaphorical and internal? This Ark seems to be a mysterious bit of our history. Any direction from your awareness would be appreciated. Thank you.
Well, thank you. It's very real. It is an object, but it's also a concept. It's a concept that has given form. I'm not sure about Africa. The CIA have been releasing a number of hitherto hidden documents, but they've been altered. Otherwise, you'd have a whole stream of treasure hunters heading, you know, to this place and that place. Great Britain is a key repository for some material. You're not going to be surprised to hear me say the Vatican is another key repository, and there are other locations. Different organizations, most of them secret, strive to obtain these artifacts and hide them away. So you couldn't say that a particular elite group has everything. There are probably three different elite groups that have a monopoly on hidden objects. There's also off-planet entities that have interceded to remove certain groups because they didn't want them falling into the hands of humanity. The Ark of the Covenant is a very real object. You have to please try and remember those who originally saw it in action never had a computer, never saw a motor car, never saw an aeroplane, and they were trying to give words to something they had no framework to express it. The nearest thing, I think, is like lightning. They could try and think about natural events, earthquakes and lightnings and things like that. So they couldn't give a true technical perspective. They were able to give measurements of the device as shielding around the device. They could give that because that was part of the ceremony, part of the, you know, part of what they had to learn how to do that. I'm not convinced it's in Africa. Very real thing. Thank you for your question.
Okay, thank you. Angel says, Hi Simon, Thank you for bringing your enlightened wisdom into this world. I would like to know what you know about the crystal skulls. There are supposed to be 13 original skulls that, when brought together in one place, will reveal all of the stored ancient knowledge encoded into them. They may not have all been discovered at this point in time either. Interestingly enough, I found on the internet there is technology being developed that can write large amounts of information onto a crystal, and then it can be read with a type of laser.
Yeah.
So this doesn't seem like an impossible idea to me. What can you tell us about this, please?
Okay, that technology was secret in the 1970s. My mother actually was one of the things that she worked on. Not like a silicon chip, somewhat different than that. If you were to take a quartz crystal, and much finer than a silicon chip. A silicon chip is made of layers of silicon with the grids, the pathways put into it. But a crystal has simply, I don't know if I could say hundreds of thousands or millions of very, I don't really call it, you could, and they did, lay down an etching, a etched circuitry with a laser. And then you've got like a trillionth of a millimeter. The next layer, just above it, there's just this small insulating piece of crystal, and they'd etch another pattern, circuit pattern on it, and so on and so on and so on. So although a crystal might only be so big, if you think about the tower part of it, it has maybe 500, 600, 700 chips, the equal of a silicon chip, actually in it. That's actually what was found in the crashed craft at Roswell. The silicon chip is just a very poor copy of what they found. So why would they do that? They do it because crystals have a regulate beat. They have their own stored electricity. Humanity understood that you could regulate a quartz watch. You could regulate a battery-powered watch with a quartz crystal. If you were able to plug it in, it would beat at the right rate. It has a life, in a sense, and it produces an energy. And if you were to ask any divine woman who had been lifetime in Atlantis, she would tell you very much about the capabilities of crystals. The second part of that question was to do with the crystal skulls. Those of you who read Lord of the Rings will be familiar with the Palantir, or the Palanti. These were like crystal balls that were in a number of towers in this fable story. There was the crystal ball of Orthanc, the Palanti of Orthanc, and both Saruman and the king-to-be used these, and so did Denethor, who was the steward of Gondor, where there was a Palanti. And these were crystal balls that connected with each other and allowed the user to communicate over thousands of miles and see images, etc. The crystal skulls were created by a human race from Sirius. And most people who have a serious component to their soul. And that was an unintentional joke, but I think we'll keep that in there because that was just so weird. Those people that have quite a proportion of a soul that comes from Sirius will want a crystal skull. Even if it's just a small one, you will be drawn to it. Absolutely you will be, and so you should. It was your people that brought these here and mined the right sort of quartz as well, probably South America, possibly India, and created them. They are communicating devices. They should be able to communicate with each other no matter how far away if the operators are in tune. But it is said in old ancient lore that if the skulls were brought together into a circle, then they would enact something. There were 12 skulls plus the 13th activator. And it's, you can see the pattern. We have 12 strands of DNA, and the 13th needs to come in to activate it. So it's the same principle, 12 and 1, 13. Crystal skulls, even today, 2019, truth be known, they don't have the technology to create them. They can't do it, not to the same quality that they were. And we're talking now, some of them are dated quite recently to about 650 AD. But even in 650 AD, they didn't have the technology to do that. I suspect many of them are far older. So if you have a serious component to your soul, go out and treat yourself to a small crystal skull. It'll do you the power of good. Oh, for meditating as well, if you're left or right-handed, hold it in your hand. It'll help you to meditate if you have a connection to Sirius. Thank you. I think we're probably ready for one or two more questions. We got one or two more left?
Yes, we have. Oh, Eddie from Hong Kong says, in order to ascend to higher dimensions, humans are asked to be of service to others, loving to all beings, be vegetarians, etc.
Okay.
How did reptilians get to a higher dimension than humans?
Well, that's a good question, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because they're certainly not vegetarian, I can vouch for that. Because the reptilian race is dog old. It really is. They're so old that they don't even know how they got into this quadrant of the universe. They just have no knowledge of it. I think they've always been, to a certain extent, service to self. Their own records imply that they arrived in this quadrant and they don't know how. The undercurrent is that something even more powerful than them, so fed up with what they were doing, literally picked them up as a race and transplanted them a long way away from where they were and dumped them in our quadrant. And I believe that's true, but they won't admit to that because that doesn't go down the story they want. At the time that we're talking about, moving from third to fourth dimension, they were striving for technology, they were fairly self-centered, they were not as warlike, they were all about the survival of their group, and they were far more diverse than they are now. And they made it into the fourth, but they only just made it. They pushed into the fourth, but they just made it into what we call the lower fourth. So they didn't hit the screen with a huge wallop and get three quarters the way up there and settle down nicely looking to the fifth. It just managed to creep like an old jalopy, creep through the barrier and settle into the fourth. And that's where the problem started, because fourth dimensional energy is where Satanism resides, it's where paedophilia resides, it's where all of the greed, all of the nastiness, that's what we have. And you know, the third dimensional Earth never had any of that. It doesn't exist in the fifth dimension or higher. It's just here in this rather gooey fourth dimensional stuff in the lower fourth. And so once they'd reached it, it was a trap, because they were already on this service to self path. They wanted to conquer, to create. And the more they became service to self, then the more they were never going to get out of the fourth dimension. And indeed, what happened, using my hands as a, I mean, they began to bulge down into the third dimension. So they were so heavy in their intent that they began to impress on the third. Now, the problem here is that if we have a roof between the third and the fourth, as it's pressing down into us, the veil is stretched. And so literally at 2:30 in the morning, GMT time, we are the closest to these bad guys, and that's why most attacks occur at 2:30 in the morning. That's why so many gifted and psychic people are now seeing images of stuff which 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago perhaps was less. We've reached this tipping point where these rather unpleasant creatures are now so pressed against our reality. And remember, we're trying to move forward. So there is this beginning of a crossover. That's why more and more people are getting glimpses of this other side. So I hope that helps to answer that question for you.
Okay, thank you. Last question is from V, who says, greetings and good vibes. Her question is, 10 years ago, I caught a glimpse of what I thought was a 5-foot-tall reptoid while shopping at a store. Mm. The profile of the head was 1 foot long, much like a Komodo. Uh-huh. Blunt muzzle, grey olive colour, small eyes, was outfitted in a shiny black insect-like carapace,
uh-huh.
medieval-like armour.
Yeah.
Head had no armour. I didn't see a tail. Not enough time. It was upset that I saw it. It fussed with something on its gauntlet or wrist and disappeared. I thought it was a juvenile something. I wasn't alarmed, just surprised. Do you have any comments on this?
That's wonderful. You've not dreamt that. You won't have picked that up on the internet. You won't have read that in a book. You've genuinely experienced it. I have as well. They're very into armour. It is generally black, and it rather reminds one of a cockroach or a beetle. It's black and shiny, and it's in segments or parts like that. It is definitely armour. It's not part of their body. They can detach it. So that's exactly what you've seen. Now, what's interesting is that the face you've described is not the same as a Draconis reptilian. There is a native group of reptilians that live under the earth, who doesn't, but they are benign in the sense that they want neither contact with humans or anybody else. So they're benign. They don't come and cause problems, but if you were to break unintentionally into their camp, they wouldn't be very happy about it. Now, the face you've described, that is what I would call the native reptilians. This foot-long face, that's exactly what that is. I'm not familiar with them wearing armour. I'm familiar with the warriors of the Draconis reptilian group wearing armour. But there again, there will have been a huge crossover over the millions of years of cultures. So it's quite possible that all these groups that have had trading arrangements or have come across will wear the armour. So that's fascinating. The fiddling on the wrist, either it really did go out of phase and left into another reality, or something was done to your brain so that you couldn't see it. It's very psychic. All reptilians are very psychic. So it knew that you could see it. So it could see your mind and was aware that you were aware of it. It clearly wasn't there to hurt you. It could literally been there just by chance or what have you, but it has done something electronically which has made it fade, go out of phase. That's a really good story. It's 100% genuine. Fantastic that you shared that with us all. So listen, we've done over the hour because it had been so long off the air. I bet you thought I'd all gone for a big vacation. No, not at all. Can't afford a vacation, but we all need one, and it's really important that we take a break. And unfortunately, the break I had wasn't actually a vacation. But I want to assure you that as long as we can keep going, we will keep going, and we will keep doing these shows and speaking the truth and trying to get that out there. So thank you so much for your patience and your kindness. So we'll be speaking to you soon. Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.